Hello, everyone, and welcome to Marxist Clover, the podcast where we take a critical look at an anime. I'm your host, Eric Hobbs-Bond, and with my co-host, the Engels next door. How are you doing, Engels? And what have you been up to?
Not much. I've been sick most of this last month. I know that won't really make much sense in our recording universe, but been kind of sick, been injured, been still kind of feeling the effect fallout of the election. The health insurance person that got shot a week or so ago was the head of my health insurance. So that's been fascinating. I don't know if you heard about that
story. Yeah. We are really going to date this podcast because this podcast is not going to come out that close to when we recorded it. So everyone's going to find out a lot of things that they're like, oh yeah, yeah, I remember when that happened.
I think it's important. I mean, we found out that I think the guy who did it got caught today.
Yeah, I heard he was like some tech bro.
Yeah, he's like a tech bro. Big Elon guy. I think this just shows us that bad healthcare affects everybody. It doesn't matter what part of political spectrum you are. If you can't live, then
that's true.
Life sucks.
Even tech bros need healthcare.
They do. Other than that, watching anime. I've watched a lot of English dubs. Watched something that we're going to have an episode on in Sense of the Bookworm. Been watching Nier Automata, the anime version of it. It's been interesting because it's expanded upon it. Really like the ED. I need to send the ED to you. It's kind of glitchy. And I know you kind of enjoy kind of glitchy parts of songs.
Yeah.
Well, I've been doing that. Well, been playing a game that we might one day have to have a podcast about. We love Football Manager, but I've been playing that again. I've been building a lot of Gunpla recently. Gunpla, for the people who don't know, is like Gundam plastic. It is, yes, like a lot of how Japanese naming conventions work, like Pokemon Pocket Monster. That's why it's called Pocket Monster Pokemon.
Wait, so the pla in Gunpla refers to plastic?
I mean, it's Plowmo, which is like plastic, so.
Whoa.
It's good stuff.
Mind blown.
I know. And I've been doing Gunpla stuff. Ordered a bunch of Gunpla stuff because of some of the sales in November.
Despite planning on cutting down on your Gunpla?
I think I want to cut down on getting master grades because I just don't have motivations to build them. But I don't know. It kind of got back to me. I was building some of the kits I haven't built that are like some high grades. We might have another episode where we just talk about.
If you are like me and had no idea what an earned high grade or a master grade is, then I still don't really have an idea. You're probably going to have an episode on how to get into Gundam, and I'm sure there's plenty of time to talk about which grade is what. And
But no, I've been building some of the newer Seed Freedom kits, and they were really fun. I'm like, oh, I want to buy more of these and build them. And when the building's fun, like when you have a bad build experience and like the, because they're model kits, like the whole experience of it is just kind of weird. But I've been doing that and getting really into the weirdness of the build series, which is an anime where it's like Carnival Phantasm for like the five people that know what Carnival Phantasm is of the Gundam universe. I'm not even gonna explain what it is. Look it up on your own time. Write in a manifesto saying, I know what this is. And you'd be like, some people are more equal than others. And if you watch Carnival Phantasm, you are one of those people. And it's like just like the celebration of Gundam, and like they use like older molds, but they like add like fun flourishes to them. So it kind of got brought back in because of that. Yeah, I mean that's about it. And I've been doing Code Geass research as we speak. My package for my collector's edition that has what you're going to be talking about, I'm guessing, a chess set. And
yep,
because we like dating ourselves. I think the thing that has been consuming your life has probably been, go ahead.
Yeah, the World Chess Championships in classical chess are going on, and it's definitely been consuming my life. I'm a huge fan of one of the players, Ding Liren, and
why?
Oh, I mean, I've really like him as a guy. In sports, I do tend to gravitate towards Asian players. And back into the 2010s, he was...
Were you a big Nishikuri guy?
Then? Oh, I was. Nishikuri, like, back in the day, on the men's side of tennis, if it wasn't Federer, then I'd be watching Nishikuri. Gosh, that backhand.
Okay.
So, yes. So, in the 2010s, Ding was one of the only Asians, certainly the best Asian, around in chess. And so, I'm just a huge fan of him since back then. And since then, a lot of people have gravitated to him, which makes me happy. He won the last world championship by a series of coincidences, including the best player in the world deciding not to play, Magnus Carlsen, who is either the best or the second best chess player of all time. Yeah, decided he was a bit tired of classical chess and wasn't enjoying spending like 6 months every 1.5 years or so focusing on one match. So the title kind of went up for grabs, and Ding even clinched it in a really dramatic and emotional fashion. And now he's back, and he's had a terrible year. Like, he has played to the level of someone outside the top 20. So everyone expected him to lose his title defense this year, and he's up against an 18-year-old from India, the youngest ever challenger to the World Championship, which, I mean, 18 is insane.
That's pretty young.
Yeah, I don't think enough people realize or, like, appreciate how insane it is. I mean, previous record was Kasparov, and I think he was, like, 22.
But there's so many young grandmasters now, it seems like.
There are.
I also don't know anything about chess, I'm just saying that.
There are, and there was recently a conversation with Fabiano Caruana, the best American chess player. And there was a discussion about three-year-olds who play chess and whether the record for who's the youngest grandmaster will be broken.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Fabi was pretty skeptical because, I mean, there is just a certain limit to how much you can learn. It's hard to be a grandmaster, and that record has become so coveted that it's led to some shenanigans. So all the more recent holders of that record have been a little... There's been some possible fudging of rules.
Yeah, I've heard, like, I think I read an article on New York Times that, like, there was one of them that, I forgot who it was, but, like, if you have money, you can pay to get a lot of games in.
Yeah, that's one of the accusations that float around. Because to become a grandmaster, not only do you need a certain rating, you also need what are called norms, which requires winning tournaments or doing well in tournaments that grandmasters are playing in. So yes, there's sort of stories of people being paid off, like grandmasters being paid off to lose on purpose. And then there's also like the more undetectable subconscious stuff where if you have an old grandmaster who's no longer really active and you're playing against someone who will become a GM if they beat you, you might not try as hard.
It's like in 12 Angry Men when there's a person being accused. No, that one of the witnesses is an old man, and the old man character says he just wants to be noticed because he knows he's dying, and you know, no one cares, and that's why he was here today to speak on the stand.
And that's your daily dose of existential dread.
Yeah.
So yes, like in fact, one of the last holders of the youngest GM title did eventually become a world championship challenger and faced Magnus Carlsen and nearly won.
Who is this?
Kariakin, who Magnus does not seem to like as a person, and like Magnus has talked about that match where when he thought he was going to lose, he was so down in the dumps and horrified, not so much because he was going to lose the world championship title, but that he was going to lose it to Kariakin, a player he strongly believed was a lot weaker than him.
Mm-hmm.
But Magnus being Magnus, he stormed back and won the title. And yeah, speaking of coming from behind, that's kind of Ding's speciality in matches. He just knows how to show up when the chips are down. his record in these World Championship matches when he is trailing is so much better than when the scores are tied. So yes, to date this podcast to today, yesterday he lost in the 11th game of the match. So he'd only had three more matches to try to equalize, and very next day, today, he won in a dominant fashion. And yeah, he just keeps coming back. And the thing about Deng is he is so vulnerable, and when he's down, it's so obvious, and he's talked about his depression and his struggles with mental health. And like, this is one of the reasons why he was not fancied this year, was this whole year, he's kind of looked miserable every tournament he's played in. And yeah, so a lot of people kind of pigeonhole him as frail mentally. But he keeps on coming back when he's losing in these match situations, when it matters most. And I do like it, because it's another way of thinking about mental strength. Like, you can have the Novak Djokovic, Bjorn Borg type athletes and players who just look mentally indestructible, and that is insanely impressive. But like, Deng is like a model that, yeah, sometimes you can be mentally destroyed, and that doesn't mean you're not able to be extremely strong when it counts. Yeah, I just feel like that's a cool model.
Mm-hmm.
You can self-combust and still be mentally strong.
No, it's very anime. This is an anime podcast. This is an anime podcast. Can't ever give up.
I don't know if Shonen would agree with that take, though. Would Shonen let you break down in the same way? Like, would they be more of the Djokovic Bjorn Borg school?
I think, like, in certain longer running shows, our main character gets beaten, and it's all about learning to get better again. So yeah, maybe it's not about responding right away.
Because like, a lot of those shows, they don't get mentally beaten down, and it's about the wellspring of optimism in an Asta or Naruto. I mean, Vinland Saga, I guess, is a good example of maybe of this.
That's true. Also, Naruto has to deal with the fact that his boyfriend left the village and left him with his sloppy seconds in Sakura. So I don't know. I think that's mentally
and
tough.
And that's hard for you to say.
Yeah, DeConza. No, it's not. I don't like Sakura.
Yes, you have no long running childhood trauma based on Sakura not winning out.
Sakura is a bad character. What does she do? Nothing. She's good. I don't like her. I don't constantly think about how annoying it is.
Yeah, I think I'm worried that if we ever do a Naruto episode, I'm going to have to edit a 12-hour long track.
You know, I can contain myself. I've talked to you about a lot of the more unhinged things. Yeah, I mean, if we ever do it, I mean, it's one of those things where I can contain myself. I think that's why if we ever do an episode on this, it'll be more about fan fiction than it will be about me defending Naruto. Like, if we ever do Naruto, we'll do something on Naruto. We will not do something. We will have to do a different episode about my unhinged feelings of the pairing of Naruto-Sakura. Because Naruto-Sakura, I have lived that relationship. I have gone on adventures on that relationship. Those characters are different than the anime characters that I'm watching.
Yeah, and you know, they're the shadows in the cave. And if you go outside the cave, Naruto's with Hinata, but can still enjoy the shadows.
I never said that I'm okay with Hinata. I'm not gonna lie, I don't like her. As I talked to one of our other acquaintances recently, Hinata is a character that maybe only is liked because filler exists and other bad reasons that might have to do with the subject matter that we're going to talk about later. You guess what that is, listener.
Yes, Angles is staying in the cave.
The cave life. The allegory of the cave is that you don't have to accept that Naruto and Sakura aren't together, and that there is a sequel series called Boruto, and that this whole diatribe about Naruto and Sakura and Shonen became a discussion about Naruto and Sakura and not about Ding. Sorry, Ding. I don't mean to do this to you.
He does tend to get overshadowed in a lot of conversations. Yeah, and again, this is such a weird topic to talk about because by the time this comes out, everyone will know the results. I mean, I'm assuming everybody listening is just on the edge of the seats following every move as it happens. Yes, but yeah, someone who doesn't know how it ends, two more games of Classical, and anything could happen in those two, I feel. And if not, it goes to tiebreaks, and I think Ding is the strong favorite if it comes to rapid tiebreaks, where they play with shorter and shorter time controls. But yeah, we still have two games before we get to that, and I don't know what to expect. It's gonna be awesome.
Also, have you been watching anything recently?
I've been keeping up with a couple of the shows. The Shrine Maiden show is pretty fun.
And the big discussion point amongst our group of friends was, how do they afford to go to a nice school?
Two of the characters seem to be going to an expensive private school despite living in a shrine. And
yeah.
I don't know, maybe there's some big scholarships for Shrine Maidens at the school?
There must be.
And also, their logo is really well designed. Like, they put way too much effort into the logo of this school.
Really?
Yeah, it just looks really cool. Should we talk about Dan Dan Dan?
Yeah, we can talk about Dan 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 Dan.
I mean, I don't know if we have much to say other than it's good.
It's good.
Opening is good by Creepy Nuts.
Creepy Nuts, I guess. I like about Dan Dan is that, one, the dub is really good. Two, everyone in the show is kind of cute. And not that they're cute looking, which they are, but like, it's just a very cute show with very silly people being very silly, dealing with very absurd problems.
Yeah, like the lack of milk, which is going to come up later.
That's true. That milk stuff was so stupid. The thing we're going to talk about later. The milk thing in Dan to Dan made sense. I once had a theory in high school about what if on another planet that what if people's blood was made of Coca-Cola. So the writer also thought of the same thing. So thank you, Dan Dan writer, for making my unhinged thought be a thing. Thank you. Well, and other things, we've both been watching Yakuza Fiancé. We kind of brought it up in a previous podcast, right?
Yeah, I may have edited that bit out, but yeah.
I mean, who knows if this will make it in anyways. So,
yeah, Yakuza Fiancé is, I mean, I'm so excited for it to be done so we can actually do an episode on it.
I am too. It's so messy. And I love it. I just like how messy it makes me feel. You know, it's like every once in a while I forget. I like scummy shows. Like, I want to be in the muck. I like seeing characters that are likable, but they're not good people. I guess they're both. They're good for what they are.
Sometimes it's good to ascend from I can fix him to no one can fix us.
No one can fix us. And the world doesn't care that we don't really need to be fixed. Only people who care about the norms. See, this is what happens in society where you don't care for the people. You let, like, the Yakuza exist, where they will exploit people and hurt people because the political system leaves them behind and creates a need for the Yakuza and makes it so our wonderful main character is also a Yakuza, technically. I mean, I could totally see her becoming, like, one of the most bloodthirsty Yakuza bosses ever. That would be a very fun adventure. Basically, spoilers for a future episode, if she was the main character of A Sentence of Bookworm, this would be awesome.
I mean, you love the Yakuza video game series. I think we both like a lot of shows that are Yakuza themed, that kind of have the Yakuza as the kind of noble hero.
Yeah.
With a heart of gold. So we like the romanticized version. But this show does a nice job of showing, they're awful people and they're doing awful things to people.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really good. And we'll have a whole episode on it.
Yeah, we have to, because it's too good.
I mean, we'll also have an episode on Blue Lock. I mean, as I call it, the slideshow. Because we just learned we're sports fans. Chess is a sport.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Wait. And I have a pathological problem with trying to get into all kinds of sports. Every sport I see. And what's special about the Ding 11 thing is I have so many sports that I don't often get to feel just so invested in one particular sport where, like, a bad result can ruin my day. And, this gives me a chance to feel that.
For people who don't like sports, yes, that is one of the major appeals of sport, is to feel depressed about something. It's strange. it's very fascinating.
We watch sports to know that we can still feel.
We do. Unless you're like a Magnus fan when he was still playing at the peak and he felt indestructible.
Yeah.
And you're only a fan because he was number one. If you're a fan of Magnus now, I get it. I kind of like Magnus now from what you talk about with him, where it just feels like, nah, abandoning the chess world. Because I remember how angry I was when he said, I'm not going to basically be dethroned. Because there is something frustrating about someone who is the best in their sport not allowing for them to go to the slaughter, go to pasture, basically.
And chess fans are uniquely unable to really grasp this, because chess is a game in a closed system.
We had an off-air discussion before this where the thing about chess that makes it weird is that there is randomness to any sport.
Yeah.
Where chess, there's not really that much random, because everything is in a self-contained system.
It's like there is a Platonic ideal. There is the world outside the cave.
Mm-hmm.
While with all other sports, there isn't anything. The shadows are everything. So, the ball can bounce a strange way, and that could change the course of many sports. That doesn't happen in chess. Like, nobody makes the right moves but executes the move wrong. There is an objective, true, correct way of doing it that the computer can tell us it's the correct way of doing it.
Yeah, you can't, like, basically do the most confusing and off-brand strategy, because it's already been simulated, because has every game probably ever been simulated on a computer?
No, not every game that's ever possible. There's a lot of discussion about how many moves are possible in chess, and there were some popular answers that were based on more like a statistical upper limit where people made a super rough guess and they mm-hmm. kind of get bandied around like they're the actual number. But really, we don't know.
That's funny.
And there's a good chance we'll never have computers strong enough to find out how many moves there can be, let alone what those moves are.
See, no one will ever understand that, really. AMD, Intel, why are you trying to have the most powerful processors ever? And it's like, is it for games? And then a chess fan will be like, no, you finally do it. Process every game.
Oh, right.
It's like a football manager thing where it's like, you want to have the best computer ever so you can simulate every game within a second, because that would be awesome.
If anyone listening has a $5,000 Threadripper CPU, which... Well, I mean, I don't know why you would have it, but if you do, please simulate Football Manager with every league loaded and tell us how fast it is.
Write in a manifesto to MarxistClover@gmail.com.
Yes, we can become a computer hardware podcast if you want.
But we won't.
No, because we're too broke.
And I have all that gunplay I need to buy.
That's true.
Just think about all the things I could have done already.
All the Gunpla you could have got for a $5,000 Treadripper.
Like, oh my god. I mean, I maybe think I've spent that much money on Gunpla at this point. I must be getting close. I probably have.
Okay, so most Gunpla are less than $100?
Yeah.
So you're saying you own like 50 Gunpla?
More than that. Yeah, way more than that, yeah.
Where on earth do you fit all of them?
See, that's the biggest problem of Gunpla, is that unbuilt Gunpla is like some of the most obnoxious like space stuff ever. I mean, high grades, which are 144 scale, they're kind of like small action figures. They don't take up that much space. Like, master grades start taking up a lot of space.
And there's like these again, I think the moment we start mentioning grades, we need to end the conversation.
Yeah, but no, like your bread and butter Gunpla, that stuff adds up quickly if you're buying a lot of it at one time. But most of those are going to cost like $20. And because of inflation and also tariffs, like, there is an argument to buy your Gunpla and a lot of anime products sooner rather than later if the tariffs do actually go through. Because I think Japan will be one of the countries affected by this.
Yeah, this is going to be the most privileged take on what to worry about the new presidency. But it is a concern that the administration that's going to kill people is also going to make Gunpla more expensive.
I have some really major hot takes about Gunpla that we'll go into. I think it's actually a very bougie hobby, and people that don't tell you it's a bougie hobby don't know that they wish they had all the bougie for it, but that's a different time. No, we also had a Gundam announcement recently, so we knew a new Gundam series is coming out, so that's kind of cool
with
too.
More red hair.
So I'm really excited. More red hair. It's made by the Hideki Anno studio.
That's insane.
Yeah, so like, Hideki Anno is part of the storyboard of it. He's not the main writer. So there's been a lot of theories. It's like, I've seen like a lot of redrawns of the lead unit right now. And like, it kind of has an Ava vibe. It also kind of reminds me a little bit of Eureka 7 and that type of vibe. But I'm intrigued to see where it's going to go. Like, any new Gundam project is exciting because of the Gunpla. Because, yes, that's what eventually Gundam becomes. If you become a Gundam fan, you become a Gunpla fan. Yeah, it's interesting hobby. We'll have an episode on it along with talking about Gundam. Relative scene, that'd be a very easy episode to make. So, one other anime that's out this season, kind of a sleeper hit, is called Orb, the Movement of Earth. We're probably going to have an episode on it, I think.
Okay.
So, Orb, Movement of Earth, watch it. It's really good.
It's on Netflix, right?
It's on Netflix. It's not dubbed, which I think one of my biggest problems with... Or I think Netflix has all bangers this season because, like, Rama 1/2 is on there. If people don't tell you anime's gay, they've never watched Rama 1/2. But it also has Blue Box and Orb. But I think one of the big problems with Orb and Blue Box is that they're not English dubbed. And I find that to be very confusing because I think Blue Box is so immaculately animated that I think it would really work having a dub. And I don't know why paying for it, because usually they put money and effort into it. I mean, they got Dan.
And with Orb, it's set in medieval Europe. So it would feel good. Yeah, it would even just feel natural giving it in your native language rather than Japanese.
Oh, I'd love to hear this in Italian. That'd be so much fun. It's right, because you haven't got to, like, the only person that has ever looked hot with a tonsure.
Whoa. Tell that to Miko from Quintessential Quintuplets.
Like, he is an F-boy. Also, the show had... Like, where I'm at, had this really excellent moment where, you probably haven't been introduced to, like, the antagonists of this show yet.
No, probably not.
Well, the antagonists, basically, this whole show is about the pursuit of, basically, heliocentrism and kind of debunking that the Earth is the center of the universe.
and trying to prove that the sun is the center of the solar system.
Yeah. I think what I like about this show is the idea that knowledge can irrevocably change the way that we interact with reality, like how Industrial Revolution changed the way that we view the world, or like the advent of liberalism and like changed the way that we interact with the world. Well, this is like an idea that it's fun to think about a world in which something that we take completely for granted is not accepted. And also there is a large amount of people that believe that if this gets out, it would destroy the religion. Because this is a very like, because like basically almost all of this takes place within like the church versus people who are trying to just investigate something. And the church is very much against this knowledge. So there's always kind of a looming threat in this show that the church is going to get you.
That you could burn at the stake.
Yeah, I mean, they later episodes have inquisitors and stuff that are just like hurting people. And like talks about, oh yeah, you know, you just got to get used to it, bro. Got to get used to like torturing them. If you don't torture them well, you're going to waste a lot of time. And we all want to get home to our families.
You shouldn't have to work overtime in your torture job. Like, your boss shouldn't force you to torture past 5 p.m.
I mean, if you're torturing, I mean, basically, it's like, it's an agreement with both of you, like the torturer and torturee, that's like, hey, I don't want to be here. You don't want to be here. You should just give it up. You should be a narc, and you should snitch. But it's a really good show. I really like it. I know it's going to be kind of like a review, but I initially was put off by the first two episodes. I thought they were a little slow. But then, like, if you watch past the first two episodes, like, some really interesting stuff happens. Like, really interesting characters start getting introduced past the second episode.
And it's a really cool concept. Like, when you first explained this to me, I assumed you were talking about a live-action show that you were watching. Like,
Oh, definitely.
You don't get these settings a lot in anime, so that's really cool.
Up until, like, they introduce, like, the hottest guy that has a tonsure, I could totally believe you not thinking I was talking about an anime. Because the hottest guy with a tonsure is like peak edge boy priest. He has like an eye patch. The eye patch kind of fixes how dumb the tonsure looks, but also like he has kind of longish hair, so his tonsure kind of works.
Yeah, I'll check out the show. You know, come for the Copernican theory and stay for the honking hot monk hunks. I mean, in the show Nita and Starry Bride, I watched it in the dub, but with closed captioning on. And in the closed captions, there's a prince in the kingdom up north who is gay, and his entire entourage is very handsome young men. Very much on purpose. And in the closed captions, when any of them speak, they are like labeled in the captions as hunk one, hunk two.
That's silly.
It was a good job by the captioners there.
Speaking of hunk one, hunk two, and honkers,
Oh! We
can talk about the anime we're going to talk about today. I guess I'll just spell it out. I've been listening to a lot of Sheppel Roan recently. She has a song called Hot to Go. And it's like H-O-T-T-O-T-O. It's a good song. It's an instant classic. But we're talking about B-O-O-B-M-I-L-K. Yes. Oh, wait. I said boob milk. Whatever. I know what I said. We're talking about boobs. You're like, it took you this long to talk about boobs? Yes. But why? One of the new animes this season called...
Goodbye Dragon Life.
Goodbye Dragon Life. Is it good? I think it's a very alright series. Verging on kind of cute and kind of okay. It's a passable isekai. It's better than most of the isekai this
Even
season.
Even though it's not really an isekai because it's from that world.
You're right, it's not.
But he was
You're
a
right.
different being.
he's a dragon that had an 8-pack, and then he becomes like a human dude. Then he's in a village with a bunch of outcasts. He meets a very kawaii Lamia who's just very cute and very lovely. He talks about her lovely sex moves that her mother taught her, and that she has to be careful during the relations because of... Sorry. It's just dawning on me that we had such a lovely, good conversation, like, about chess, and it's just gonna devolve into what we're about to talk about. I'm sorry, everything that came before this. This needs to be talked about.
But yeah, her bodily fluids that she excretes during a chess game, should we say?
Relations.
Yeah. When she's pinning the queen. Are poisonous?
Yeah.
So she's looking for a husband who will not die?
Yes. But that's not what we're talking about this show.
Those are not the bodily fluids that we're here for.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about a bar. A milk bar. And you're like in Clockwork Orange? No. Weirder than Clockwork Orange.
Something weirder than Clockwork Orange?
Yes. We're talking about a milk bar that's owner is a cow woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't want to say cowgirl because that makes it sound what it is.
It makes it sound like she goes to a rodeo.
Yeah.
Well, no, she like...
She has a cowgirl, and that's a very big... She has a cow child that is a girl.
Yeah, it has a happy family with a not cow man, not a bull man.
Yeah, he's based. He believes in miscegenation, I think. Is that the right word for it? He believes in mixing the races.
I mean, we're two guys on a podcast, and if we wanted to make it big, we'd make it all about the miscegenation and the great white replacement in isekai.
We could, but we're not. That would be dumb. But it still won't be as dumb as what we're about to talk about. So we are at a bar. This is a saloon, your tavern. It is a milk bar. All the milk at this bar comes from this one cow woman.
Like from her breasts / udders, whichever, whatever you want to call them. Badonkadonks.
They have to be breasts.
Okay.
They have to be the breasts. Like, if she has udders, I have never seen in any thing. And you're like, hentai? Yes, this is a very hentai idea. That's why we need to talk about this.
Is there a technical definition of the difference between boobs and udders?
I don't know. That's a good question. If you're a biologist and made it this far, write into MarxistClover@gmail.com. It would be very helpful. And you're like, you could look it up. I don't know if you figured this out yet. We were history majors, and we're history people. We don't care about what the difference between udders and breasts are.
Yeah, we care about who Louis Pasteur is, but we don't care about the biology of where he got that milk.
Pasteurization is a big deal. So basically, all the milk comes from this one woman, and we have been dying to talk about this. We've talked about this endlessly because it's weird. It's like... I don't know if I've seen a more unhinged idea in an anime that is stealth. Like, this is a stealth, weird piece of world building. Let's just start off by the fact that milk comes from the milk of this one woman is the most unhinged sense of world building. And one of our anime of the year, which I guess we'll have to talk about soon, is Delicious in the Dungeon, one of our favorite shows of the year. But it has great world building, but it has some really unhinged stuff. I think this is maybe the most unhinged thing that I have seen this whole year.
And the show tries to pass it off as normal, but it's like, no.
Yeah.
Everybody in this village is drinking milk directly from the breast. Well, not directly, but drinking milk that's from this woman's breast.
It has to be fresh, too, because like, I don't know. I know there's magic in this world. But do they have, like, refrigeration technology? And, like, I don't know if they have pasteurization.
Yeah, this is where it's confusing. Because at one point, a character says, oh, well, don't blame me if I exhaust the villager's supply of milk. So I don't know if they have a stockpile that she just adds to every day, or does she just literally squeeze them out as the orders come in? Or does she like just squeeze them out every morning? I don't.
Does her milk taste differently than everyone else's milk? I don't remember what it's like to have breast milk. So is breast milk good? Or I guess this is cow milk. Have you ever had fresh cow milk? I mean, is she? I don't know if it is cow milk because she is a woman.
But she's a cow as well.
Yeah, she's a cow. So have you ever had fresh cow milk before?
No, I'm a big fan of Louis Pasteur, as we established.
I also haven't either. I think, and where we originally were from, we're like a few degrees removed from having fresh milk. Me more than you, of course. So, but I don't know what it's like, but if it's just so strange. Like, are they drinking it? They're drinking her milk directly. They're not going up to her. This is not a sex show. Surprisingly,
yeah, there's no suckling.
After we talked about, there's no suckling. There's no implicit sex. It was good because this isn't the biggest reason why we're talking about this either.
But her hands must get cramps from like squeezing them out every day.
I don't even think she has like a pump either. It's not like this isn't like an industrial world where she can be. Industrial, which is good because there's part of me that's like, how does she run a business where people are ordering milk? And do they make food at this place? How is the sanitation at this place? Because like her clothes must be milk stained.
I mean, that's why I think she probably removes the top when she milks.
See, as a person that doesn't. God, we sounds like this is such a dumb podcast. But does like the breast milk? Does like since she's like suck like letting out so much, will it leak out?
I mean, I think that can happen with human breasts sometimes, but it's not really a major problem. Yeah. I don't think for those people. So,
okay, that's good. We are men. If you want to cut out that last part, it makes us look like dumbasses. It makes me look like a dumbass.
We aren't experts on human anatomy.
We are not incels. We are not pro incels. Don't be a pro incel.
But if we wanted to make this a really successful Manosphere podcast, we'd be talking about the great replacement theory and our male opinions on women's bodies.
I think about, well, does she make other food? Is she the only person? Like, I don't think there's a lot of staff working there. The only other staff is her daughter. We'll get to the daughter in a little bit. And maybe her guard husband, who I think is a guard husband. One of the the first time this happened when I was watching that, you brought it up. I'm like, what? And then the second time it happened, which is what we're talking about, is where I'm like, whoa, that's kind of weird because they have like, a milk drinking, they have go to the bar and have like a drinking party, and it's like, I can out drink you.
And yeah, I know you pointed out, like, yes, if you drink a lot of milk, you will throw up.
Yeah.
But they are competing in a way that's like alcohol. Like, they react to the milk the way you would react to alcohol and get drunk from the milk.
Yeah. Also, I love milk. I drink a lot of milk. I can push back quite a few. Like, if you put me chocolate milk, I'll drink a lot of chocolate milk. But the amount they're drinking is pretty
intense.
This
would be the one bar that you would actually order a lot of drinks in.
The thing is that there's only so much you can do with milk. There's a lot you can do with chocolate milk, where I think there is like a lot of levels of a good chocolate milk. There is a difference between like a bad chocolate milk, which is like the low effort syrupy stuff, which is barely mixed, and you can at the bottom of it there you can still see like the chocolate syrup.
Yeah.
I mean, then there's like really hardcore glass bottle type of chocolate milk where the syrup is there and you're like, oh yeah, that's because they put the work in. What I'm more confused by is that how is she producing that much milk to keep up with demand? And that's where I guess we bring up the maybe she milks herself. Or maybe she gets milked every morning. But I also think if I'm coming here, I want some fresh milk. And is there a difference between fresh milk? I mean, they don't have pasteurization because I don't think the milk lasts very long without pasteurization.
And I feel like it's implied that it's like, hey, come and drink today's batch.
Yeah. Life is a new batch of milk. You never know what you're going to get.
Oh, yeah. Life is like a batch of milk.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get. I've been real watching Forrest Gump. Watchable film. I don't know if it's very based. Sorry.
We could make plenty of Marxist analysis of Forrest Gump.
Yeah. The Marxist analysis is that Mao Zedong was impressed by Forrest Gump's table tennis. This doesn't happen in the movie, but I guess Forrest Gump does save Mao Zedong from drowning.
What?
Yeah. In the book, he saves Mao Zedong from drowning.
I mean, Mao is famous for swimming and getting photographed while swimming. So that's an interesting connection they made there.
Yeah. Also, I think he may have been better than the Chinese ping pong players.
Which, to be fair, in that era, the Chinese weren't as dominant as we're used to nowadays. Like, fair. Sweden were probably a bigger hurdle at the time. Actually, that might have been three Sweden dominance. Anyway, I'm getting distracted by sports as usual.
Yeah, moving on. So, the milk is strange, and like the... I don't think milk produces an alcoholic thing. This is a fantasy world, so maybe milk is like that. Maybe she can make instant amount of milk very quickly. You know, maybe I should just accept that milk can come from a cow woman's body very quickly. It's not painful. Her breasts aren't going to be sore.
Yeah, it would feel like her nipples would just hurt like hell.
I feel like I don't know if she could wear clothing. Once again, we're not women and we've never been milked.
No, we have not.
So we don't know what it's like.
I mean, technically men can be milked, but that's a whole different genre.
Yeah. So, yeah, I do think about it too. Like how painful must your breasts be in like clothing? And I'm not trying to be horny or anything, even though this is an extremely horny idea. This is like the horniest thing.
The show does not realize how insanely sexual this is. Like, the show does not realize any of the sexual connotations of this? I don't think it does.
No, I don't think so at all. The cherry on top of this is that one of the characters we haven't introduced, doesn't really matter, basically wins the bout against the dad, who is not a cow or a bull.
Yeah, they have a drinking competition, and she wins.
Yeah, and then the mom and the... Is it proprietor? Is that the owner of the establishment?
Yeah, I mean... She's both the proprietor and the cow, so, I mean, her title is a bit vague.
She's not going to have the cow title. That would be weird. I was also reading about cow towns today, and I just forgot how funny of a term a cow town is.
What's a cow town?
That's where you bring your cat, like, back in, like, basically farming in the Great Plains, where ranching became really big. This is, like, the place where you would bring your cows to be shipped to like Chicago.
Oh.
This is like usually like the train stops or like cow towns.
Oh, okay.
That would go to Chicago and that would bring you to Slaughterhouse 5. I'm kidding. I thought Slaughterhouse 5 was about slaughterhouses in Chicago. I learned it's not. It's about Dresden.
Maybe it's more like the jungle, Upton Sinclair.
Yeah. So it introduces to us the daughter who we've brought up and the mom cow, the proprietary cow.
Yeah, does she have trademark? Like, does she have patents on her milk?
Well, I don't know.
You don't have to answer that.
if it's a box of breasts, you never know which one you're going to get, because guess what? A character gets to taste another person's milk. The daughter's milk.
This is where it
looks like
weird.
She's nine. This is where the daughter looks like she's 9 or 8 years old. She looks like a bebe. She looks like a calf. She still looks like a calf. She doesn't look like a calf. She looks like a human. But she very much looks like a bebe.
Yeah.
And she gives her milk. It's also in like a smaller glass. And it's so stupid. It's like in a smaller mug. And it's like, is that how much she's able to produce? Or is it trying to show, oh yeah, her milk, she can't do as much as I can. My milk is in big
jugs.
No,
because I think the character asked for seconds.
Okay.
So I don't know why it comes in a smaller mug.
That's true. That's true. Oh, maybe they ran out of big mugs, because this feels like my favorite thing about alcohol is that, or like when you have drinking competition, you have individual glasses that you drink out of. You don't just constantly reuse the same glass.
I never thought about that. I mean, at least that's how I see it in shows. And I mean, I guess we don't know enough about drinking.
I guess it logistically makes sense, though, because then you can tell how many you drank.
Oh, okay.
So it's an easy way of showing it. I was thinking about it from a logistical. That sounds like a waste of mugs.
Yeah.
Just saying.
And all the water you'd have to use to wash them.
Once again, the amount of grody things that these things, that the smell of milk is going to do. It's like, imagine like people that spill the milk in this place. And like milk, I don't know if you know this, but milk is a very unpleasant smell. But like milk is nasty. And it attracts bees and really annoying insects to be around it.
Hmm.
So it just smells nasty. It's like coffee when it goes bad. Like coffee and milk, because usually there's coffee and milk, so it usually smells really bad. As a person that had to clean out like garbages that had coffee in them and like milk, it's like, ugh, just smells bad. And like, I don't know how hot these milk are. Like, it's like, if over time, this milk is going to get bad, and where are you going to pour all this milk?
Yeah, is it like lukewarm when they drink it?
Oh, it probably is. I mean,
because on, yeah, if it's fresh, be the body heat.
You want it from the tap, you know?
Yeah.
There's only one tap, which once again seems very inefficient. Well, I guess there's two.
I guess I don't know how warm breast milk is.
I don't either. Such a stupid idea for having a conversation about this.
And as two people who don't have breasts, this is, we are exposing our lack of knowledge.
We're very cringe. And also, don't randomly go, don't just go up to a random person and ask, what is warm breast milk like? Write a manifesto, Marcus Clover, at Gmail. And tell them, they're wondering, don't go up to a pregnant woman. Yes, I also do think that there's also some weird inducing stuff that has to happen for the, at least this is what I've always understood about milking cows, is that they always have to be in a somewhat pregnant state to actually get milk, from what I understand.
I mean, I know with humans, you can induce lactation. Pregnancy is not required. It's just kind of hard to induce it. It's a lot of work.
Once again, if you're a veterinarian, you know a lot about and you're a cownarian, like, write into MarxistClover at Gmail to tell us about this. We didn't toot the groundwork in. This is a podcast. This isn't a research-heavy thing.
Yeah, don't get your boob and other facts from this podcast.
Oh, so we keep getting around it. So yeah, the small child who maybe is like below 10 gives her breast milk to this woman, and it is the weirdest exchange I have ever seen in anime. Also, this is her first time she's ever given her milk to anybody. So,
and her dad was supposed to be the first drinker?
First drinker of the milk, which I think sounds really strange and kind of scary and nightmarish that you say, oh, my dad was going to be the first person to drink my breast milk. I get it. We don't have the same values as these people in this village.
This is a cultural disconnect.
My naive realism, my naive relativism, I think that is the right word. I'm forgetting. I don't know. Keep it in. I like sounding stupid sometimes. write a manifesto at MarxistClover at Gmail. Like, I don't know. I just, this thing just is just, it just has been hanging around in my mind. I don't get why you would do this. Like, why do you think they did it?
Like, why did they write this in the story? Like, what was going through their heads?
Yeah.
Like, they wanted to write a hentai, but got a job writing a normal show?
Or is this like the Sea Boy Mutiny with the cartridges, where they didn't think, where the author just wrote it in, didn't think about it, and ended up upsetting every single person that was affected by it.
Yeah, in the How to Sea Boy Mutiny, one of the triggers was cartridges that were made with grease of cow and pork meat, and that was very offensive to the Muslim and Hindu sepoy soldiers. But the British probably didn't do it maliciously, they just didn't even consider the issues with that. And yeah, I feel like the show is, instead of cow grease, it's cow milk, and they haven't thought through the just the weirdness of this.
Yeah. I don't think so either. I think their hentai brain, they revealed their fetish and didn't realize in talking about this that they had just completely outed themselves and what their fetish is.
But is it? Because the show doesn't like fan service her boobs as much as like excessively.
No.
So maybe they just don't think of any of this as sexual.
No. Which makes it sex.
Because of Thomas Foster?
Because of Thomas Foster, our favorite high school, favorite book we had to read in high school. How to Think Like an English Professor. I think that's what the name of that book is. Because, I mean, because it did say food is sex.
Right.
All right. I hope that was a honking good time. You had a honking good time talking about honkers. And maybe other things. I don't know what they are. I hope you enjoy our boob conversation. I don't know if I did. It made me feel very uncomfortable and very strange. Some people would be like, that's a good way of getting a lot of money. I say it's a good way of being very weird and being kind of creepy. And with that,
thank you for listening to Marxist Clover.
And if you've not gotten the message, send your manifestos. Was that manifestos? Manifestos at marxistclover@gmail.com.
Send us all your information about the Bedonkadonks.
Or comment on YouTube, because we now post these on YouTube.
Yes, and that's going to really help the algorithm if everyone's talking about boobs in the comments.
It probably not, is it?
I mean, YouTube punishes so many words nowadays in the algorithm.
We're a podcast that doesn't get a lot of views, so who cares?
That's true. That's true. We will speak our booby truth.
Your booby truth? Okay, yeah, this has been booby truth next door. Oh my god. Okay, it's been the Angles Next Door.
And I've been Eric Hobbs Bond.
Have a lovely day.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye bye.
Ohayou gozaimasu. Ora, ora. Ora, ora. Oi, Kudo.